Midwest, with readings as high as 110 or more. Overnight low temperatures will range from the upper 60s across northeastern Wisconsin to near 80 degrees across western Missouri. Again, as we go to the forecast now for East Central Illinois, an excessive heat warning remains in effect until 7 p.m. Friday evening. An excessive heat warning means that a prolonged period of dangerously hot weather will occur. The combination of hot temperatures and high humidity will create a dangerous situation in which heat illnesses are likely for those outdoors or in locations without air conditioning. The forecast for this afternoon, partly sunny, hot and humid with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high in the low to mid-90s. Heat index readings will be around 100 degrees. The wind from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 75. Heat index readings will remain around 100 through the evening. The wind out of the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny, hot and humid with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 95. The highest heat index readings tomorrow will be recorded in the afternoon, and they'll range from 110 to 115 degrees. The wind will be from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 75 with heat index readings around 110 during the evening hours. The wind light and from the southwest. Wednesday, sunny with a high in the mid-90s and afternoon heat index readings around 110. The wind from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday night and Thursday, mostly clear with the low in the upper 70s and a high in the mid-90s. Heat index readings 110 to 115. In northern Illinois, cloudy at noon. In east central Indiana, cloudy. Otherwise, sunshine was reported across the region. Rockford checked in with 86 degrees, as did O'Hare. It was 90 at Peoria, 89 degrees at Mattoon, 88 at Carbondale. South Bend reported 88 degrees, Lafayette 91, and Terre Haute and Indianapolis 90 degrees. At noon, it was 89 degrees at Willard Airport. The dew point 76, giving us a heat index already of 100 degrees. The relative humidity 65%. The wind out of the west at 8. The barometric pressure 30.12 and rising. The sky was mostly sunny. And at 12:40, 91 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. A new study by the AARP estimates that for the more than 40 million Americans caring for an elderly or disabled loved one, the value of their work is $450 billion a year. That's a good deal for society, but for family members doing the work, the study finds they need a lot more help. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
Simondo Henley's mother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis as he was starting college. She's now wheelchair-bound, and Henley, 36, has been taking care of her for nearly two decades.
A little bit more, some little bit more. Right there is good.
He rubs a prescription cream under her right knee. It helps with severe hot flashes and loosens her joints.
You know, I've had to give her injections before and that kind of stuff. This is much easier.
Henley does have help. Montgomery County, Maryland, where they live, and the MS Society pay for 35 hours of home health aides each week, though that's threatened by budget cuts. But every day, Henley must help his mom in and out of bed, onto the toilet. He even rolls her over in the middle of the night if she becomes uncomfortable. Care like this from a professional can cost tens of thousands a year. But Henley does it for free, of course, and on top of his full-time job. The AARP study finds family members spend an average 20 hours a week providing care. Henley refuses to count, but his mom, Vicky, keeps tab.
Simondo's care for me was about 40 hours a week.
That's like another full-time job.
Yes.
Modern medicine now allows people to manage chronic conditions for decades, but the AARP study finds increasingly complicated procedures are routinely expected of family caregivers. Hanley remembers the time his mom was being discharged from the hospital. She had a catheter in, and the nurse said, "Oh, we'll call you and tell you how to take it out over the phone."
And I said, "Oh, no, you will not." Because I'm like, really? This is my mother.
The burden on families is huge.
Lynn Feinberg co-authored the AARP study. She says modern family caregiving is incredibly stressful.
While families are stepping up to the plate and provide this contribution to society, the costs to their own health and financial security is huge.
The study finds those who cut back work lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in income over a lifetime. Feinberg says caregivers are also more prone to depression, to physical ailments, and social isolation.
They will burn out, they will get sick, and there will be no other option but to place someone in a nursing home, which is what nobody wants.
And if the burden for caregivers seems big now, Suzanne Mintz of the National Family Caregivers Association says it's only going to get worse as the baby boom generation enters old age.
Boomers have fewer kids than their parents did, and they're working, and they don't necessarily live around the corner anymore.
On top of this, there's a shortage of paid home health aides. Last week, the Obama administration joined labor groups calling for the creation of 2 million more jobs in home health care, plus a new visa for immigrants willing to enter the field. Suzanne Mintz has grappled with the problem in caring for her husband, who has MS. Earlier this year, she had trouble finding someone to change his catheter twice a week while she was at work, so she says she resorted to something a little crazy.
With Stephen's permission, I actually put a note on the neighborhood listserv.
A little different than watering the flowers?
Yeah, right.
Sure enough, a man who works from home said he'd be willing to try it. He's been doing it ever since, for free. Mintz says we need to expand our definition of family. Next year, she plans to launch a recruitment drive to match those in need with volunteers.
It might be, I can drive her to PT for the next 5 Thursdays, or I can bring meals for the next 6 months.
In other words, create a community of caregivers, an old idea, really, for a new age. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
It's 12:44. Google has rolled out its latest venture in the world of social media, Google Plus. It's been out in the world for a couple of weeks now. Morning Edition's Steve Inskeep spoke to technology journalist Jennifer Ait Lee to learn about the newest social network.
So it's white, and it's sort of a much more elegant design compared to what I consider a fairly cluttered look of Facebook.
Nina Gregory, who's the producer of this segment, put up a posting here already. It says Steve Inskeep is about to interview Jennifer Ait Lee about Google Plus for Morning Edition. What do you think he should ask her about? Already a bunch of people have put in questions here. For example, Greg Yannick asks, is her middle name really Ait?
It is really Ait. Ait is good luck in Chinese.
Oh.
Though, it's really funny because when I actually signed up for Google Plus, it had pulled my name from my email. Mm-hmm. And then when I hit, like, enter, it said, your name does not conform with our community standards. Please try again later.
Because your middle name is a number. So we're clear on that.
We're clear on that.
A lot of curiosity about what Google Plus means. Does it make sense to have another social network?
Yeah, it completely does, in part because just having multiple of anything spurs innovation.
Hasn't Google tried to get into this market before and failed?
Yeah, I would say that, a lot of people for a long time said Google doesn't get social. In part, they, because it's a very engineering kind of company, and for some reason, social never seemed engineering enough. And so it kind of basically flopped with Google Buzz, which is sort of a Twitter-ish like product, and another one called Google Wave. So, a lot of people were really skeptical. I was pretty skeptical kind of going in. But I would say I've been very pleasantly surprised with Google Plus.
So do you have any indication that Facebook is worried here?
When I signed up for Google Plus, my reaction after playing around with it for a little bit was like, I think Facebook should be scared, in part because it's a really elegant product. It's very fast. Search is fantastic. Search has never been a strong suit of Facebook. It gives people a lot more control over they're short of information. The other thing that's really powerful is that there's a very strong Google Plus Android app, which allows, among the things that it does, it automatically syncs the photos from my phone into my Google Plus account. So it has both a mobile platform and a social platform, whereas Apple has a mobile platform but not a social platform, and Facebook basically has a social platform but not a mobile platform. So Google suddenly has kind of interesting opportunities with the synergy of where those two things intersect.
It has been presumed that Facebook has a gigantic advantage over any other social networking venture because it's where hundreds of millions of people already are. Is Google
right.
Plus likely to be able to overcome that advantage?
Yeah, Google is not starting from nothing. It has hundreds of millions of Gmail users. And with Gmail, it has a pretty good representation of the people you communicate with and therefore your kind of quote-unquote social graph. When I signed up for Google Plus, it recommended 500 people for me to invite. You know, and then once I invited those 500 people, I got another 500 people. So it has a huge installed base that it can start from. Now that we've had several years sort of understand, you know, how a social network will work, it let me design things from scratch in a way that's just sort of cleaner. It's like moving into a new house instead of into a cluttered house. And so you can kind of, you know, buy the kind of furniture you like, and you can use, you know, decorate things the way you like. And so in a way, for me, my social circles is more fairly represented on Google Plus.
Technology journalist Jennifer Ait Lee. She spoke with NPR's Steve Inskeep about Google Plus.
Lake Mead is on the rise, and the timing couldn't be better. Las Vegas and other cities were headed toward water shortages from the reservoir, so a reprieve is in sight, at least for now.
It's one good year. It's one good year in a period of 12 extremely bad years.
Some relief for millions in the parched Southwest. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of July, 2011. It's the birthday of William Makepeace Thackeray, 1811, born in Calcutta, India. His father was an English administrator in the East India Company. The boy came back to London, studied law, thought he might become a painter, and then got his inheritance when he came of age, lost it through gambling, bad investments. His stepfather set him up with a newspaper job as a foreign correspondent in Paris, but the paper folded, and Thackeray returned to London, married a penniless Irish girl, became a journalist. They had three daughters. One died in infancy. After the birth of the third, his wife went mad. He sent her to live with friends in the country. She outlived him by many years. Thackeray, best known for his book Vanity Fair, a novel without a hero, which he published in monthly installments in magazines, 1847, 1848. The account of the well-born Amelia Sedley and the ambitious, adventurous Becky Sharp.